Hello, this is Nick and Niall representing the SRA Boardmasters, and we're here with Spring King. Hello.
Hello.
How's it going?
Is it your first time at Boardmasters?
It's actually our second time. We played here last year, which was great, although it was raining last year. This year we've got some nice weather, so it's all good.
It's a bit of a nicer day to play the festival tonight.
Which stage did you guys play last year?
I don't actually remember what it was called, but it was one of the tents, one of the smaller tents. The blue tent, whatever that's called.
Yeah.
But it was a good show, it was fun, but this year they put us on the main stage, which is quite a big step up for us, and it was really good,
How did you find moving from a tent sort of environment to a main stage? Do you prefer playing main stage, or do you prefer playing in a more intimate environment?
I personally prefer playing tents, honestly, but at a place like this where the view's so incredible is actually well better.
Yeah, absolutely. I was going to ask about the festival itself, because you said about going to the beach later and enjoying yourselves. What do you like this festival because of the unique experience that it offers like that? Does it stand out from other festivals for that reason?
I think, like, you know, just the actual view alone makes this festival, in a way, it's quite different. You know, like, there's not a lot of festivals that integrate sport and music, you know, the same way that you know. So I guess for us, like, Boardmasters brings like a lot of different people together in a different way to other festivals, you know. But other festivals also have their charms and also have their kind of unique traits, but yeah, just the view alone of this place, the cliffs are amazing, and yeah, it's beautiful. It's just a beautiful place.
Is there any other festivals this summer that you'd pick out that you're particularly looking forward to?
Reading and Leeds, we're doing in a couple of weeks. We played last year. Where was it? Festival Republic stage last year, and this year on the Enemy stage. So it's going to be ridiculous. Yeah. Last year was amazing, so I'm hoping for a similar type of feeling this year.
This is the first time I've managed to catch you guys live. I've been wanting to catch you for a while, and I've got a real punk feel to you guys. Is that intended? Is that something that you're aware of? Especially when you played live as well, more so than on the album. I got a real punk feel to it.
I think we've all been brought, well, most of us, I know Andy's like a big jazz fan, and we've all got really wide tastes, but we've all been brought up on like a lot of sort of like hardcore, and like we're all like big At The Drive-In fans and Fugazi and all those kind of guys, so it's definitely something we try and put across live.
I think as well the album, well, we tend to see the recorded version of songs and the live set as quite different things. We try and give different types of energies, so hopefully, yeah, it's kind of a bit different when you come and see us live, you know.
Yeah, well, your new single Detroit was out last Friday. It's a really great song, and I was wondering what the inspiration behind the song was. Is it a city you've spent a lot of time in particularly?
I had an ex-girlfriend from Detroit, and the song is basically about my experience when I went over there. And it was a good experience. I've never been to Detroit in my life, and it was a really interesting place, you know?
So your album Tell Me If You Like To, your debut album, came out earlier this year, and it's very rough around the edges. Is that something that you think defines you as a band and you want to maintain throughout your career, through your next few albums?
Well, I think we just can't play our instruments that well, so we might as well just be honest with everyone and just do it that way. I think, I think a lot of the album was done in like a couple takes, just trying to keep that, you know, try and make it a little polished, but also just keep that edge to it and keep it authentic. Yeah, like, you know, not exactly a live show, but not exactly a perfected album either. Just somewhere in between.
Yeah. Yeah, Tarek, I suppose one of the nuances of playing live is that you are the drummer and lead singer. Yeah. Does that pose many challenges when playing live?
Sometimes I get really confused and I like start slipping up a little bit with like, I'm there in the song, or yeah, but yeah, you just get over it. Or you just have a really bad show. Yeah, one or the other.
I think it's good to like maybe take risks live. I feel like the fact that Tarek has to sing and drum is kind of a risk just in itself. And I think it just means that every show is different. You know, we're not doing the same show every night. There tends to be little things that change. I think to play the songs in that way keeps them exciting, but I think also to watch the songs, especially if you see a few different shows of us, things change, and I think that keeps it exciting, honestly.
Is it stuff that you guys have to adjust to with what you're playing? Going by what's going on with the drums and the singing?
Yeah, I mean, for me, like, what I like to hear in my monitors on stage is a lot of drums. The drums are what I play to, so when they change, that affects how I perform as well. But it's an exciting way to have to think on your feet a little bit, you know? Yeah.
So halfway through the set, you actually left the drum kit and just went out and sung no drums. Yeah. Is that something you feel comfortable with? Is that something that you want to do more of in the future?
I never feel fully comfortable, like, when I perform. There's always a bit of a nervous energy there, you know, which is what keeps me propelling forwards. And getting off the kit, I just really like playing that song. And we all like it. You know, it's like a bit of a slow moment. It gives everyone a bit of a different angle on us, you know? Like, there's a lot of variety in our music. And I feel like that's something we want to show more and more over the next few years or whatever, you know? Just, like, get that variety across. And, yeah, playing that song, standing out, I get to have a little break, you know? And I get to see the crowd and do what these guys do, you know? Walk around a stage and, you know, use my feet. It's cool. I like it.
I think it's a nice moment for the crowd because, like, Tariq's like a proper thoroughbred frontman, really. So it's a nice moment for him to get up and, like, really, you know, stretch his legs and just get up, have a proper look at everyone.
Yeah. Yeah, well, you guys have got an exciting headline tour coming up in October. I was wondering if there's any venues in particular you're looking forward to playing.
Academy 2. God, don't tempt me. No, we're not doing the Breeden. We're playing at the Wardrobe in Leeds. Leeds is one of my favourite cities in the world. Like, so that's going to be really good. We're doing Coco in London. That's going to be amazing. Rescue Rooms in Nottingham is going to be amazing. We did that with... we did a couple of venues. We did a Dot to Dot. We did a Thekla in Bristol as well, which is an amazing venue.
To be honest, we could be playing in a shed or a massive venue, but as long as we're having fun and the crowd are going nuts, then it's going to be a good show. And, you know, our last headline tour, like, I remember we played in Nottingham and there was a stage invasion. Like, people, like, it was just chaos. And I think that was one of the first shows of that tour. And then we played, like, album launch parties in Manchester and London, and they went off. It was, yeah, we have a good time.
Yeah.
It's good.
Yeah, I can tell. So, following this, you said you've got Reading and Leeds. I think you've got a European tour as well at some point, followed by your headline tour. Are you going to be resting after this, or are you got plans to start work on a second album?
I think we could all do with a little bit of time off at some point this year, but at the same time, I think we are starting to think about what's next, like, musically. I think you always need to try and stay ahead of the curve a little bit, and there's definitely some demos popping up now that are feeling quite good, so I imagine we'll give ourselves a little bit of time off in November and then probably get into the studio and start thinking about what's next, you know.
Thanks a lot for joining us. Best of luck with the rest of the festivals and the tour in October.
Yeah. Awesome. Thank you, Spring King. This is Nick and Noel on behalf of the SRA at Boardmasters. Delighted to be joined by Sunset Suns. Hello.
Hello.
Hello, guys. Welcome.
So you guys played a sold-out beach sessions yesterday, and you've just completed a DJ set as well. How are you enjoying the festival so far?
The DJ set was better.
The DJ set, I think, is the best gig we've ever done.
I'm presuming that's sarcastic.
It was awesome.
No, it was good fun. The fact that DJs is being mentioned in our interviews now. I mean, it's been banned around. I can't say this though. The nice gentlemen that are on after us, they faded out Prince halfway through. Oh, and my mum always said, right, that she'd never share half a lager with someone that did that. So, in fairness, you know.
And actually, that is.
If you upset Leslie Laidlaw.
Yeah, you don't want to do that. You want to share half a lager with Leslie Laidlaw.
Exactly.
Don't fade out Prince.
But no, yeah, the gig last night was great. It was really good. It was a really good vibe. It was really busy.
Down the front going absolutely
people on each other's shoulders and all that. It was great. Yeah. I really enjoyed it.
So, you guys are based in southwest France. Is it Biarritz?
Correct.
You're down? Just north of Biarritz, and you've done a season in the Alps. So you spent a lot of time in France. Has sort of a French influence taken hold of your music at all, or the way you go about things, like the amount of time you spent there?
I start playing the harpsichord, and I really like Serge Gainsbourg.
Yeah, Rory plays gypsy jazz in his spare time. He's really influenced by Django Reinhardt. You probably can't tell, but there you go.
The main has an influence, man. We basically, any time we get off, if we're not seeing family and friends, we're back in France, really, kind of family. It's just quiet. Where we live is really quiet. Get a bit of downtime, get in the water.
Waves are good, cheese is nice.
Yeah.
Why France specifically? Southwest France.
Yeah, we kind of all end up there on our own sort of backs, is where we met. And we end up just kind of making this sort of good sort of group of friends down there. It's just nice. We've got like a nice little vibe where we live, and you know, it's like Roy says, our mates are there, and the waves are good, weather's nice.
And there's not many people there. There's no hustle and bustle. Yeah, it's very, quite, very little hustle.
It's quite cruisy. It runs about the same pace as us, which is quite slow.
Yeah.
And, it's nice.
you guys started out as a covers band, right?
Yeah.
You're right. I'm sure.
Twice in 1 year, right?
Being such an amazing covers band, why did you choose to move on to writing your own music?
Well, I was very assertive on making our own stuff because I thought we had it in us. And these three were like, nah, you're right. And I was like,
I don't think so. I specifically remember you saying that we just haven't got it.
I was just like, this is the God's honest truth, right? I was quite happy. We're living by the beach in the summer and spending a lot of time in the water, snowboarding in the winter. It was this nice little life. Didn't have any money, but it didn't matter. And then Roy said we should write some songs and be like a real band. And I was like, if we do that and we all fall out because then my cushy little number's over.
Yeah. In your face, Rob.
And so I was totally against it a little bit, and then we wrote a few songs.
And like, do you know what? There's no better way I like to prove my point than headlining our first festival this year and really rubbing it in Jed's face and being like, look at it now, mate. Yeah. Look at us now, Jed.
Yeah, man,
they took a bit of convincing, but...
I'm DJing and everything.
Yeah, we're having a soaring DJ career. Cheers.
Obviously, surfing's a really big part of your guys' lives.
It was. Until we started doing this.
Well, I was going to say, at one point, you were quoted as saying that music was just a means to an end for you to pursue surfing and snowboarding. Has that changed?
It's funny when you see stuff written down because you take it seriously.
I believe pretty much everything I read.
Yeah.
Especially if it's on the internet.
That's all. I don't know. Like,
well, surfing's not going anywhere. So,
I always think, like, to be serious for a minute, like, we never really take ourselves very seriously, but like, take music seriously. Like, we're really quite passionate, and it's the only thing we ever fight about.
Passion.
Excellent. So you released your debut album, Very Rarely Say Die, in there we go. You released it in April, and it was produced by Jaquire King. And J.K. King.
I don't want to get it wrong, but you took a shot.
I did.
I got it wrong.
So he also worked with Kings of Leon and Tom Waits. So did it help working with such an esteemed producer?
To be honest,
it did, yeah. But we kind of did it between two producers. We also worked with another guy called James Lewis, who's done like a lot of stuff with Arctic Monkeys and a few other people like that. And but working with Jaquire was awesome. He was like,
we were all like kind of terrified of him for the first couple of days.
Yeah,
he's a scary fella. But
we settled in nicely. The studio over there in Nashville where we did it was absolutely like unbelievable. And the guys just like took us in, and at first we were a bit hesitant, and then we just settled straight into where we were.
It's just a great dude, man. Like great vibe.
He's
really
knows how to get the best out of us. And same as James as well. And just like some stuff we did with Jaquire was unbelievable. A lot of the stuff we did with James was unbelievable as well, so it's all kind of gone into the one melting pot that was the first album.
They each had their elements they brought to the album, and the album, if we'd done it all in Nashville, it wouldn't have been the same. If we'd all done it with James, it wouldn't have been the same. So to mix the two, and there's also a guy called Joe, who actually we recorded the version of Gold.
We did one song with him.
Yeah, we recorded his version of Gold a couple of times. We did a demo and we're like, great song, we'll put it on the album.
She's not having
recorded it and it sounded just didn't have the same vibe, so we ended up putting the demo on actually. So the track of Gold on there is a demo that we did, and it just had the sometimes you kind of catch the elements you want in a rough session,
and we just got it in the first go, and so we were like, just use the original
record. So yeah, Joe, same as
She Wants as well.
Joe doesn't
that
get enough
first
love.
Original time we ever
Joe doesn't get enough love, but he we've done a bunch of demos with him and they've always sounded amazing. So, nice one, Joe.
I was wondering whereabouts we could catch you and if there's any venues you were particularly looking forward to playing.
We always love playing in Newcastle. It's like our home away from home. Back in the tune.
It is pretty ace.
Just no fights next time. First the gig of the tour and they decided to kick on a fight. And it was with Gold, which is a sexy tune.
Yeah.
And it wasn't sexy fighting.
Generally, I think Geordie's a lover's not fighters. I couldn't understand it. But, you know, who knows?
Well,
someone probably called someone's plane.
There is a Geordie, isn't there a Geordie smile? No. Geordie punch?
No.
Geordie headbutt?
There's a Geordie screwdriver, which is when you bang your hand on the top of a TV to fix it.
Oh, okay.
No, but it's always nice playing down here as well, so, you know, they're all going to be good.
You said you tweeted out today saying you've got some big news coming out on Monday. Can you Can you shed any light on that for us?
We're going to do a little. We're going to do a little show for Teenage Cancer Trust, like a warm up for Reading.
Yeah, they've asked us to do something. 24th of August, Islington Academy, London. We're doing a gig for Teenage Cancer Trust.
Yeah, really excited about it.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Very quickly, before we let you go. So in 2015, you were listed on the BBC Sound of 2015 nomination. Amongst various other lists. Did you feel pressure going into 2015 with this sort of expectation and those sort of eyes on you?
It was really not, I thought it's getting on all those lists, like we didn't, to be honest, we like felt like we'd been shot out of a cannon and didn't really know. To be honest, it might have been a bit early for us really, because we were just like really coming into our own and like we'd only written about 6 songs and all that sort of stuff, you know? But it was really good to be on it, and it's like having like your big brother standing behind you just with your back, you know? So like people, it made people like pay attention. I feel like winning those things puts so much pressure on you.
It would have been great too, because yeah. Roy loves a competition.
I love a competition, I hate losing. If we'd won, we've got to up our game even more, you know? And the fact that we got put on that list meant we had to bring our A game. So if we hadn't been on any list, it's kind of like a down, no, it's not downhill, but when you say like, did it put the pressure on? If you haven't got pressure, like, I think it's a bit really. Because what does pressure do?
Pressure makes diamonds, baby.
It's just a cool thing, you know? It's that a good thing? But, I don't know. It's like, it's nice to get some recognition, especially like a few of the polls, like, some of them don't matter, but the ones that are like, you know, people like you, like, respect their opinions.
Well, thank you very much, Sunset Suns, for joining us. Have a great rest of the festival.
This is Nick and Narligan at Boardmasters, and we're delighted to be joined by Louis Berry. Hello.
Hello, lads.
How
are you?
How are you?
I'm good, yeah.
Is this your first time at Boardmasters?
It is.
Yeah. And how are you enjoying it so far?
It's good, you know. I'm just like, I've only arrived recently, so I'm just going to get ready, get warmed up, get the physical warm-ups going, the press-ups and the jogging and all that, you know what I mean? And then, just warm the voice up and then get on stage. I'm on stage in like an hour, so...
You seem pretty excited, and you've got a lot of energy for someone who had an 11-hour or 12-hour journey to get down from Liverpool last night.
That's standard for us now, so I'm used to it, lad, yeah.
You're playing the main stage today. Are you looking forward to playing, you know, a larger space, a bigger crowd?
Yeah, definitely, you know, it's exciting, you know. For me, I feel more at home on a bigger stage than a smaller one. The smaller ones are more intense, and, you know, the people can see the sweat dripping off your head, you know what I mean, which is good, you know, but... A big stage for me is where I like to be, you know. I can move around a lot and can have more banter with the lads, you know. The lads can move around a lot more, me bands, you know. So yeah, it's good. I'm looking forward to it.
And you've been touring quite extensively. How's that all gone?
It's been good. It's been really good, yeah. You know, I enjoy touring. I enjoy being on the road. I'm looking forward. It's the first time I'm going to be over to Europe soon, in the next couple of months. So I've got a lot of gigs coming up over there and things like that. Yeah, I'm really excited for it.
You did take a couple of days off earlier in the month. Was that because of the extent of touring, or was that just like...
No, I got sick, you know. All the lads, we all woke up one day with a cold, and I just woke up with a fever, you know what I mean? So, I got it worse than everyone else, and it put me out of action. I mean, I got better, you know, quite quickly, but I just couldn't clear my chest and my nose, and you can't sing with that kind of thing, so, yeah. It was a shame, but, you know, I'm only human and it happens.
Yeah. So you're quite obviously from Liverpool, which is home of some of like the greatest music acts in history. How do you think that shaped your music on a personal level?
I don't know, to be honest with you. You know, I'm open to shape that history of Liverpool, you know what I mean, as opposed to being shaped by it.
Fair enough. Yeah. That's very ambitious, that.
Yeah, no, definitely. You've got to be, haven't you, you know. Yeah, I visualise it in my head, you know. I see myself being there, and, you know, if I would have told people when I started I'd be playing the main stage, they'd have laughed at me. But I, you know, I seen it in my head, and now I'm here. So, you know, I'm just going to keep doing that, moving forward.
Cause I did see that you said in one interview that you wanted to be the biggest solo artist in the world, or biggest artist in the world. Do you need to be that ambitious? You need to be that confident to actually achieve that?
Yeah, definitely. You know, you've got to have belief in yourself. But for me, I think it's, you know, I've got a lot of stuff that no one's heard, that, you know, that I've got coming. I've been working over in America on it and things like that, and it's. You know, it's completely, you know, 100% next level to what I'm doing now. So, you know, I think I'm going to back that up. I know I'm going to back that up, and we'll see how it goes, yeah.
Do you think growing up in Liverpool with the music scene there, do you think that gave you that confidence and that level of ambition?
No, because I didn't grow up with the music scene in Liverpool, if I'm honest. You know, I grew up in Liverpool, but, you know, the music scene in Liverpool is, you know, it's predominantly the city centre, and it's not always people who are necessarily from Liverpool. Yeah. So for me, it was a foreign place to be. You know, it was something that was out of my comfort zone. You know what I mean? I'd never been played music with bands or anything like that. You know, I'm from the streets of Liverpool, not the city centre. You know, it's a lot different. But being from the streets of Liverpool, you know, it definitely shaped me. You know, I don't see any other artist coming from the kind of background that I come from, doing what I do at the moment. So, you know, for me, I don't think there is any competition out there, which is why I believe, going back to your last question, I can achieve the things I set out to achieve.
It's the first day of the Premier League season today. Are you a big Liverpool fan?
How about yourself? What about you?
I'm a Fulham fan.
A Fulham fan, that's all right. Yeah. And yourself? That's all right. Yeah, you know, I'm confident. I think Klopp's going to be a really good manager for us. I think the team's got a lot of spirit again, that we lost for a period of time. But, you know, we'll bounce back. We're consistently good, you know, and I think this year will be a very good year for us. I think he needs maybe this season and next season is when he'll achieve the things, you know, he's setting out to achieve. So, yeah.
So you won a one-to-watch competition in Merseyside as well? I mean, I know you said that your music, or you developing your music, wasn't really focused that much in that area, but how do you think that helped? Obviously, massive confidence boost, I'm sure.
Yeah, you know, I got a phone call saying, do they want to take part in a competition? I refused. I said, no, I don't want to be in a competition, you know. And then, you know, they phoned me up and said, look, you know, we think you're going to be in the final. Yeah, can you be involved in the competition? I was like, no, I didn't know anyone at the time who was involved in it. I said, no, I'm not interested. Yeah, and the next thing they phoned me up and said, look, you've won the award, you know what I mean? Do you want to come down and play a gig and collect it and all that? And then, you know, going there and meeting the people there, like Peter Guy, who set it up, you know, he's been a massive help to me in Liverpool and, you know, outside of Liverpool as well. And yeah, you know, from there I've developed some good relationships and it's definitely helped me along the way, yeah.
You're very active on social media. You've got your own Snapchat. You're very good at retweeting and replying to fans on Twitter. I was wondering, is fan interaction something that's very important for you?
You know, for me, I'd love to swear on my profile, on my bio, you know what I mean, and say, stop being, you know, follow people back, you know, these are the people who pay money to come and see you, and, you know, if you notice my Twitter, you know, I don't care about numbers, I just follow people back as much as I can, you know, for me, it's not about trying to look like you've got the biggest numbers or anything like that, you know, it's more about interacting with the people who pay money to come and see me and support me, and never, you know, not just about the, you know, paying money and coming to see me, but more so much about, you know, they believe in me, you know, so, you know, I believe in them and I think it's important to interact with them and do what you can for them, yeah.
Your song 25 Reasons has had a lot of support from Radio 1. I think Annie Max played it quite a few times and you also played BBC Radio 1 Big Weekend. How has the support from such a big radio station helped you?
It's helped massively. You know, Radio 1's been great for me. You know, all the DJs at Radio 1, I think they've all played me now. You know, it's been really good for me and you know I've met them personally on a couple of festivals and obviously when I've been into radio want to do interviews and things like that and you know you can't ask for more really, you know, it's the best platform to be on, and for them to support me, you know, I'm honoured for that, yeah.
You've got a tour coming up in October. Where can we catch you and which venues are you looking forward to playing?
Do you know what, I mean, I'm not doing Liverpool in the October tour, which is, you know, I'm getting a lot of stick off, you know what I mean, from the people back at home, but Manchester's the closest one to Liverpool. There's a couple of gigs that, you know, in and around Liverpool that'll be coming up in the future, but Manchester's always a good gig for me, you know, it's close to where I'm from. A lot of Scousers will travel over there and a lot of Manchester people have come down to see me, they always do, and it's been great, yeah.
How come not Liverpool?
I always play Liverpool and I think, you know, next time I go to Liverpool I'm going to, you know, I want to cause a roadblock, you know, next time I go to Liverpool I'm going to be adding stuff into the set that's going to be a lot different, that no one's heard before, you know, a lot of piano stuff, you know, we're going to get choirs on stage and things like that, so yeah it's going to go up, you know, next level stuff. So
and finally I want to ask you about your album plans. So you spoke about traveling over to the States to record some stuff. Can you shed some light on any future material that we might hear from you?
Yeah, you know, a lot of the stuff that's coming on the album will not be what people expect, you know. It's a lot different. What I've put out at the moment, for me, almost feels just like a little demo, just a little introduction, you know. You know, the people I'm working with and the team I've got around me, including some of the people, you know, as you were talking about, who support me on Radio 1, have heard a bit of the new stuff. And, you know, it definitely is next level. So for me to, you know, I'm going to bring that forward and see what people think about it.
I look forward to hearing it.
Louis Berry, it's been a pleasure. Thank you very much and have a great set later.
So it's Nick and Noel at Boardmasters with Protégé. Hello.
Yeah, what's going on?
Is this your first time at Boardmasters?
Yeah, it's my first time in this part of the UK.
And how are you enjoying it so far? How do you like the look of the festival?
I just came outside for the first time. It looks good so far. I'm going to drive around a bit, walk around a bit and see how it is.
How does it compare to other festivals that you've done?
In UK or all over?
Anywhere.
It looks like it, so far it looks like a European festival. I really can't tell, it's too early. I have to wait until tonight when I see what happens.
Sure. Hopefully wait until the sun comes out as well. I think it might do later. Yeah, it's always a bit rainy and cloudy in the morning. Growing up, both your parents were musicians, and I was wondering if they influenced your style at all and the type of music you produce.
Not really style, I mean just the art form of it, maybe some of the skill of it, but I do way different music than my parents did, but obviously I've been influenced by a lot of different types of genres, so I'm sure there's some of that in my music.
Did they inspire you to become a musician, or was that just your own independent choice?
I'm sure indirectly, just by seeing it, being around it, knowing that it was possible, then it made me know it wasn't too big of a dream to have. Yeah.
As a well-established global reggae star, did you find it difficult in the first place to establish yourself across the world, in Europe, in places like Asia, when traditionally reggae isn't the traditional music in those countries?
I wouldn't say difficult, it just took time. Yeah. It's not going to be like easy to spread your music worldwide, so I wouldn't really say it's difficult. I'm still trying to do it like on a level and make reggae music not be like a niche market and make like Jamaican music be global. And there's lots of more work still left to do for that, but I enjoy doing it.
Because one of your songs actually features on Grand Theft Auto 5, which must have helped.
Yeah, that was Kingston Be Wise, that did good for Kingston Be Wise, and lots of things, you know, the support from BBC that I get in UK does a lot to help me in England, in UK, so it's very good.
As you touched on, mainstream reggae usually centres around Bob Marley in the 1970s, that's what people know of it. I was wondering what you hope to do for the genre and how you hope to influence. Do you want to make it more current?
Well, just by doing what I'm doing now, like making music of my generation, not trying to sound like Bob Marley or the 80s or 70s music, and taking influences from it, but repackaging it for a modern day youth. And I think we're doing that. We make it cool, we make it hip, but still potent. And sooner or later, the lines of the genre will be blurred, and you'll just realize it's just music by a Jamaican artist, but it's wide, you know.
A collaboration's key to that, because you've collaborated with Chronix on your song Who Knows. You've also collaborated with Kai Mani Marley on your, I think, debut single Rasta Love. Do you think that's key to making reggae current?
I guess it could help if like the genre is mixing. I do a song with somebody from UK or whatever, or America, but collaborations can help, but I wouldn't say it's necessary.
How do you think working with other artists actually influenced yourself in this modern day?
Working with them is, if I work with an artist, probably means like I'm a fan of their music. So just by learning their music and seeing their styles, and I understand the music very well in terms of I can see what somebody is doing. So when I hear somebody, I can analyze what it is they have in their patterns, and it's always good to learn from your peers.
You released your fourth studio album, Royalty Free, and you followed that up by releasing a free B-side. I was wondering what the thinking was behind that.
Just by splitting it in two, I wanted to put out something free this year, and I didn't want to put out a full length, so I was like, yo, let me just put out half, a second half, and see what the feeling is, see how people respond to it, because it's a different sound and it's been going really well.
Good. And I was wondering what you've got planned next musically, and will we be seeing you on tour?
Yeah, well, definitely hoping to come and tour UK in the first quarter of next year, and I'm working on lots of new music for next year also.
Excellent. Well, thank you very much for joining us, Protégé. Have a good festival and have a great set later.
Thank you.
This is Nick and Niall at Boardmasters for the SRA, and we're delighted to be joined by Slows. Hello.
Hello.
Is this your first time at Boardmasters?
Indeed, yes.
Yeah. How did you find it? You played the main stage earlier today. How was it for you guys?
Oh, it was lovely. Really, really good. We were a bit worried when we first came on. The clouds were heavily upon us, and they seemed to part when we came on, so it was great. Really, really, one of those sort of kind of cliche festival moments. Yeah, but it was good. Really, really nice.
How did you enjoy the step up to playing on a main stage? Was it a different experience?
I mean, it's slightly daunting at the start because obviously there's all the unknown, but it's such a well-oiled machine back there because everything's so set up. They know exactly what they're doing, so you just kind of follow their lead. We're rehearsed, so then you just get to a point where you just enjoy it.
It was
really
nice to have everything really loud.
Yeah.
Not worrying about feedback.
And a lot
just
of
like,
space as well. We could just move and dance as much as we wanted without kind of like bashing into each other.
Earlier, he just likes to bounce about and like have enough room.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, when you play normally in a like a pub or wherever, you're always squashed into a tiny little area, so you're kind of moving against what you want to do with your body. It's nice to have the space.
Build up to the festival, I kept saying that I was going to do an Axl Rose and just do laps of the stage like running from side to side.
I think that's what Ricky Wilson's doing as we speak.
Yeah, well, I'll give him a run for his money.
And then you realise you had a 3-meter lead, so I won't go after
him. You guys played a BBC London introducing session earlier this month. How are you enjoying sort of getting your name out there and sort of being helped by the BBC along with that?
Actually, what we've been after for such a long time of getting those. We hear of so many bands where they just hear little step ups and then suddenly they get exposed to other areas. So we've been kind of pining after these kind of opportunities for a while now. It seems that we've been plugging away, just rehearsing. But yeah, it just seems to finally be getting somewhere. So yeah.
And it's been so nice today. We've just been at main stage dancing and watching the rest of the acts. And a number of people have come up to us and been like, "We watched you this morning." Who hadn't known who we were just came down. Like, we really enjoyed your set, and getting that recognition is just so lovely.
It's a very humbling experience.
So
yeah,
nice. Because then it's like our work, everyone's work, is just paying off, and it's something we really enjoy. So we're glad other people are enjoying it too.
Yeah, absolutely. We certainly enjoyed ourselves watching.
Oh, that's right.
I mean, not just saying that.
I'd like to see your names on our mailing list.
Katie, I wanted to ask you in particular because you're the violinist, right?
Yeah.
So. You were the latest addition to the band, is that right? Or no?
I was.
Oh, okay. Well,
I was the latest.
Sorry. Well, I'll ask you anyway. So what made you guys as a band want to add the violinist? Was it something that you intended or was it something that just seemed to happen?
Katie came to one of our early gigs when me and Joe first formed the band because Katie and Joe are brother and sister. So she was there just to come and see her brother play. And she asked if we needed a violinist, and we said maybe, and then we talked about it and started playing. So Katie's been in the band for quite a while, haven't you?
Yeah, and me and Joe have grown up playing. He plays the cello, I play the violin. So from 3 and 5, we've grown up and played classically together. So
it was apparent from the get-go, just after our first rehearsal with Katie, after... It was just so nice to have the sort of female vocal adding that sort of dynamic to the sort of range of sounds we were making, and the violin is such a dynamic instrument.
Yeah.
It doesn't only have to be classical, but given a few effects, it really does add a new dimension to our sound. So yeah.
Could we see the cello make an appearance in the Slows?
Oh, it does. The cello.
The cello
comes out and needs a dust. But when it does come out, it's nice. I mean, I'm a bit rusty, but with a bit of practice, we do have this one track called Blood, which is a lovely track. Best when it's acoustic, and when we have done acoustic gigs in the past, one to note, it was the in Nettle House in London Fields. We played on the roof on a summer's day, and then it was acoustic gig, and there was a couple of numbers where I played the cello, and it was lovely.
Yeah,
one of them was about brothers and sisters, so it was really nice. In that song, he's on the cello, I'm on the violin, and we're talking about siblings, and it's just like, aww. Yeah, bit of a moment.
I was wondering what your guys' musical influences were as a band, because from what I heard, it sounded pretty unique to everything else I've heard this weekend so far. And I thought it was a bit sort of like Fleet Foxes. That was my comparison, especially your vocals, Jerome. That's sort of the sound I was getting. I was wondering who you guys looked up to.
That's a great comment, because I love Fleet Foxes, like Follow John Misty, whatever. But I don't, we've all got such different... I mean, for me, it's sort of Smiths, Arcade Fire, Radiohead, Twin Shadow, like that kind of 80s kind of synth kind of, but I mean, it's all, it's quite a random mix we've got.
I think we've got, yeah, I think we've got a bit of a range of influences throughout the band, probably because also there's a few years from youngest to oldest as well, and so there's a kind of different genres and different kind of eras, time periods of music. But I think it's fair to say there's some like common trends within the five of us. Radiohead's probably one of them.
It kind of intertwines, doesn't it?
It does,
like,
intertwine,
with old and then modern,
we're all Bowie fans, we're all Radiohead fans, we're all Nick Cave fans, we're all
Bombay, we're all arcade.
We just like good music.
Yeah. As do we, I think. Your new single, Young, which you finished with today, I believe, that was on the Apple Best of the Week list last week. What does that mean to you guys, having that sort of recognition from Apple Music?
It's a massive achievement for us. You know, we didn't really expect it at all. You know, like we recorded, you know, the single, and then you know, we released it, and then in the last sort of couple of days, like, it's just kind of expanded, and we were so lucky to get on, you know, the Best of the Week and Apple Music and New Music Friday UK. We're in the top 20 in Spotify, and getting added to all these playlists. And
I think because of our size, it's never going to be something that's released and like bam, it's like out to everyone. But I think we, because of social media, how it is, we get notified of different playlists get added to. So you think it's slowing down a bit. You're like, okay, that's maybe that fire's dying down. But suddenly someone will add it to their playlist, and you're like, okay, we're off again. It's like, and just hope for those next little steps to someone to keep sharing it onto a playlist, and away you go. But yeah, that's kind of working for us.
I was at work and my phone went off, and I checked it, and it was just a screenshot from our manager of like the new Apple's Best of the Week with our name on it, and I was just like, oh my god. Like, I had no idea that was even, going on in the process. So it's a really lovely surprise.
It's a nice compliment as well, I suppose. When you're writing the music, you know, you think it's good, but you lose your sense of kind of, I guess you're not sure whether it is good at the end of it. So when it's kind of somebody actually who, you know, an institution says that it's good, you're kind of like, oh, good. It's like gratifying.
Yeah.
You've got that recognition.
Place on their playlist. Yeah, it kind of makes you feel good. It's like, oh god, other people actually like it.
Yeah. Wow. Recognition is always nice.
So you released your EP Chasing Tales last year. Do you have any plans for an album or another EP in the coming months or year?
We're really working on like new material at the moment. Like, we're working on singles especially just at the moment. So we're going back into the studio in September for a possible like second single. Really working on that, and then hopefully next year, like, we'll be on that.
I think we're ready to kind of lock ourselves away.
Yeah.
I think we've been saying for probably the best part of a year or so that our best stuff is yet to come, and I think we can all kind of say now that it's kind of coming out now. And I personally feel that if we did just lock ourselves away for a couple of months, an album would come out beautifully, and I'm sure it would be something we'd all be really proud of. Yeah.
We're going to be back in the studio in the next month or two with Jim Lowe, who we've been working with. Yeah, that's been a great experience to work with him, because it's kind of a step up. He's great, he understands us, and we've enjoyed that relationship. So, I mean, we're not sure if we're going to produce an album. At the moment, we're just sticking to the next song, but certainly the last couple of tracks we've recorded with him, it's been a great experience.
Because he obviously produced Stereophonics albums. What does he bring to you guys as a band?
Just a wealth of experience. It's just such a welcome release. We're so used to like recording sessions taking like having to overcome buzzing. What's that noise? Oh my god, what's that noise? And it taking half an hour to work out where that noise is coming from. And don't get me wrong, you know, these have all been works in progress and stuff like that, but with him it's just like plug in, go. The sound is amazing. The mics are perfect. Everything is in perfect position, and we're just ready to roll. And like he's so quick. He's so quick, and he just as we're recording and as it's going in, he's tweaking it. He's like working on it, and then by the end of the day, it's kind of there.
Yeah.
You know, we've knocked up. Young happened in 2 days. Yeah, and when we listened to like the, which was just such a rough mix at the end of the second day, we all have our arms around each other, just like bobbing along. Like, yeah, this is the best thing ever. Yeah, it was good.
He really gets our sound as well.
Yeah.
You know, so he's very efficient because he's been doing it for a long time, obviously. But also, he gets us and he likes our stuff, and that really helps.
The new track that we played him, we were just doing a session recording Young, like just going through it. And we played in this new track and we were like, we kind of want this one to be the next one. And he was like, yeah, love it, Glastonbury, cool, done. Yeah. And we were like, okay, see you in September.
Like, yeah, yeah. He was like, this is the one.
Yeah.
I mean, he loved the one we were doing, don't get me wrong, but he was like, this is the one. Yeah. And we were really, really happy to hear that because we feel like the next single is... I mean, you always think the stuff that's coming out is going to be better than the stuff you've done, but I think we're definitely in that boat.
Yeah, it's good momentum.
Yeah.
I look forward to hearing it. Where can we see you next?
We've got a series of dates coming up at the end of the month. We've got a couple of dates in London, Old Street Records, and a possible date coming up at the Hoxton Bar and Grill. We're playing in Manchester, and we're playing in Gloucester at the Shroud Fringe Festival, which is bank...
The 27th.
Yeah, 27th. So we've got But check our socials. / Slows Music. / Slows Music. Yeah. And that's Slows like the berry, S-L-O-E-S.
Well, thank you very much, Slows. Have a great time getting back in the studio and good luck with the rest of the tour.
Thank you very much.
It's Niall and Nick from the SRA at Boardmasters Festival, and we are now joined by the Magic Numbers. Hello.
Hey, hey. You
all right? We're good. Is it your first time at Boardmasters Festival?
It is indeed, yeah. We're having a lovely time.
Yeah, how have you enjoyed it so far? It's quite unique as a festival.
Yeah, I had a wander around last night. It's quite a young festival, like lots of young people, so, you know, that's cool. All hungover today, I'm sure.
And we're right on the beach.
That's right on the beach. We had a great day at the beach yesterday. So.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah,
it's a nice location. Great location for a festival, sweet. I think. I think you've kicked it out of the water here.
Yeah, can't really get better than that. Especially when you're on stage, you know, you see a beach just in the distance. So, great, give it to me.
Because you guys are doing quite limited touring this summer as the Magic Numbers. I wondered why that is, and also why you chose Boardmasters as a festival to do in that limited dates.
Well, Michelle is touring a lot this year with her solo record. So.
Yeah, I think basically at the moment we're recording album number 5, and it was definitely intentional to not do as much stuff this year and pick the obscure ones that we would never get out to usually when we've got a record out.
Yeah,
and
we've not been to Cornwall for a couple of years to play as a band, so it was a good way to still kind of do it, promoting the last record almost. You know?
Yeah, and it's just been really nice doing that and like sort of seeing different ones and then doing the solo stuff alongside that. But we're planning to get the record out next year, early next year, to then hammer it home. Yeah, it's good.
Yeah, I mean, how do you guys go about selecting the venues you want to play? Because I know in 2013 you played an acoustic tour where you played like churches and theatres, like slightly different venues. What's your thought process?
I think it's always quite tricky for us to put a set together a lot of the time because there's so many stuff, like so many songs that we have that require the crowd to be very quiet. But there's other ones that are like you know, festival crowd. And so when we did the acoustic tour, so when we picked all the churches, it gave us a chance to do all those songs and everyone to be seated. When the crowd is seated, it's a whole different vibe. And so, that's why we did that. But yeah, we struggle between what kind of set are we going to do? Is it going to be chilled? Is it going to be lively?
The seated gigs, we have to get everyone up and stuff. But it was a great tour, that was, and we're going to do some more stuff. Like, that was our first ever acoustic tour together.
Just clarify that you say acoustic tour. We had more stuff with us than we'd normally do.
Yeah, we brought auto harps, Wurlitzers, full Glockenspiels, tongue drums, lots of acoustics.
Any plans for another acoustic tour in the future?
Yeah, I really, really want to do one at the end of this year. We're just trying to work out whether we can. We're just kind of, you know, time and all that. But yeah, you know, it's a really nice way because, you know, we wrote songs like that. So it's nice to get back and do it like that. And get, yeah, it's a good tour to do.
You kind of answered this question earlier, but I just wanted to expand on the plans for a new album, because obviously it's be a follow-up to Alias from 2014. I just wondered if you could expand on that, shed some light on what we can expect from the new album.
So, well, we started recording, which is great, and it's from the last album we did, we learned, because we've got our own studio and everything, that we kind of work best in sort of doing things in stints. So we started and we left it for a little while, and then we're going back. And so you come back rejuvenate every time and with perspective. So like, we're kind of close to finishing it really. And the sound, because the last album was quite much more darker and intense, somehow I think you just react, like when you do something, then you want to do something else. So with this one, I wanted to write shorter songs. And it'd be much more like direct. So yeah, it's gonna be like, you know,
it's quite like rock and roll. Isn't it?
Yeah,
it's kinda like fun rock and roll.
Lots of guitars.
Quite riffy.
Yeah. So it's different again from what we've done, I think. And that's the other thing as well. Like, longer you're doing this, like it's the fifth record, you want to kind of feel like you have something to say. So that's why. It's, I guess, you know, we take the little gaps to live a little bit outside of just being the routine, churning it out, like, because you have to write about things. But yeah.
I know you said you haven't quite finished it yet, but when can we maybe expect to hear it?
We're hoping early next year, I guess.
Yeah, well, I think the plan is to, like, have it done by October and then maybe have it out by March.
Yeah, and maybe a track at the end of the year.
Yeah.
With a little acoustic
lucky.
Tour.
Yeah.
Just say if we can organise ourselves.
I hope so.
I mean, recently, as we touched on, Michelle, you've been doing some solo stuff.
Yeah.
How has that helped you? Has that helped you to bring different things to the band, sort of made you reflect on sort of what you do musically?
It's been really, really good for me to do the solo stuff. Like, it wasn't like like something that I planned to do, but it just kind of happened. I'd had all these songs and, like, you know, we started recording it, and Romeo gave me the encouragement and the guys as well, just, you got to do this. And I think it's sort of building that, and also like doing a lot of venues that we'd never done as a band together. That's like building up a following and different kind of things, and it's been really nice. And again, it's just nice to kind of go away playing with different people and then coming back, I really miss you guys. and you do really miss them, because what we've got such a gang like band, and I don't know, it's like a weird sort of like we're literally leaning on each other to, you know, to do this thing. And when you're on your own, you realize that actually it's so different, but it's really good to learn from it, and like I've learned so much doing it. And I do like the both, you know.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, I'm a bit greedy like that.
So I was going to say, you're quite unique in the sense that you're two sets of siblings as a band. How does that alter the dynamic? Like, as you've been saying, it's like a stronger bond.
Oh, definitely strong. It is really strong.
Stronger bond and much more volatile.
Yeah. Yes. When it's good times, it's great times.
It's bad times, it's real bad times.
I imagine Gallagher style riffs between.
Yes. Let's put that on record. It really is.
Is that why you've gone solo? Yeah.
Well, we checked her out.
Yeah, exactly. Actually, the real story is.
I suppose on a similar note with you, Romeo, you've been working with. Now, forgive me if I get this name wrong, but Ren Harvey. how did that help contribution wise to the band, to the Magic Numbers? How did that sort of change your outlook as to producing music and making music?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, in terms of writing, I'd heard Ren's music like 4 or 5 years ago. Like, she did first album, and I loved it and loved her voice and everything. And I got in touch because I had like a few songs that I thought could work and was different from the Magic Numbers, really. And like, because you just write, you know, and sometimes something doesn't work the band, like fit with the band.
Yeah,
there's
of course,
tons of songs sometimes we play live that doesn't really fit on a record as well. So I'd had these songs, and I've never really had a real urge to kind of go out on my own and do a solo thing. So this project works really great.
Kind of, it does kind of give you a chance to go down your back rack.
Yeah, like just to be a bit more like it's not at all musical, but it's got a lot of movement in it. So the songs, and it's a big range, and so. So in terms of writing, it's really exciting for me, and also in terms of doing that, and I think that's what's probably happened with this record, because there's quite a few ballads with the Ren stuff that I'm working on, and it's quite slow, and it's quite introspective, and like, so when I come to do Magic Numbers, I was kind of like, I want to rock out a little bit on. So I didn't really want to do that this time around, and so we were kind of having a bit more fun. So I think like it all of creativity really feeds into other things. That's why I think if you have that kind of mind to just do as much, because it'll all impact on each other and you get something.
I always think, like, as a musician, if you're not learning, then you might as well just call it a day.
Yeah.
You know, I think that's my thing. Like, people, like, if we're not learning and we're not having fun anymore, then forget it. Do you know what I mean? Because like with the amount of difference, but you should hear the songs. Like, it's so good. And if it isn't massive, like, we might as well all give up now.
In my mind, I mean, I think that the stuff for Ren's album, it's not going to be the two of us. Although we've been doing little duo shows, still her name, Ren Harvey. Yeah. But the songs are great that we've
written.
You're
like producer kind of thing, aren't you?
Yeah, and like it's. I think it's got something really different, really.
Well, thank you very much for joining us, the Magic Numbers. Best of luck with the solo tour, and I look forward to hearing the new album. Thank you. This is Nick and Noel on behalf of the SRA at Ballmasters, and we're delighted to be joined by Mystery Jets. Hello.
Hello.
You said that you've been to Ballmasters before, just off air a minute ago. What made you want to come back to the festival?
They asked us back, and we said, oh, hell yeah. It was a lot of fun. We all like to get in the surfing every now and then as well. So two birds, one stone.
Two blokes, one stone.
Yeah, more like, yeah.
You've toured the new album quite extensively. How exciting is it for you to showcase new material to the fans?
Very exciting, yeah.
It's the name of the game. That's the best thing. Well, the best thing is when they, you know, like it or appear to be liking it. That's the most exciting thing, writing it and then playing it. I mean, that's all that's really important for us. So.
I saw you guys at Truck Festival, and the new material got really good reception. Are you guys happy with how the new album's gone down?
Yeah, I'm really happy. I think people are sort of coming back to Mystery Jets with fresh eyes, really, which is something we've wanted. So I think the album's being, you know, appreciated, which is great.
So, as you say, you took the four-year break, you released Curve of the Earth. Do you think that break helped you sort of reflect on what was going on musically? Do you think it was good for the fans then to come back? How do you think the four-year break helped?
It was, in hindsight, we can look back and see how it helped, but there wasn't any plan on us taking like a three-year long break or whatever. It was kind of like, because of circumstances, you know, we weren't signed to a label, we were kind of like completely independent on our own. We lost a bass player, we were building our own studio, so all those things kind of just happened at once. It was a big kind of like snowball that we had to kind of like push over a hill and then watch it kind of roll and hit the ground, basically. Yeah. So now this is the kind of like, we can enjoy the kind of the fruits of the 3 years that we spent locked in a prison, basically making music.
I think we needed to sort of take the time to reflect on the 10 years that we had playing and touring and all the fun we had and all the experiences, and I think it was a kind of, making the record was at a sort of junction for the band. We were at a kind of crossroads because we were still getting over the fact that we'd lost one of the original members, Kai, so we were kind of bass player down looking for a new guy, and it was at a time of change for us and a time of sort of contemplation really, and working out what was important for us as a band and kind of like going underground, you know, and sort of just like, you know, powering up before coming back. So
then coming back with your highest charting album to date, that's got to be nice to get that recognition at the end of it all.
Yeah, where did it chart? I mean, no.
I don't think we were kind of looking. Well, that's, I think that's the thing with this record. We weren't really looking for the chart position or looking for the radio plays or anything like that. It just had to be. It was purely from our own experiences, and it was quite an introspective record, you know. So it wasn't. There wasn't an agenda. You know, it wasn't like we were doing something to get a return on something else. It was literally just for the sake of being together in a room and the enjoyment of making a record together with these fine.
Yeah, I mean, what'd you say after that?
I'm hoping you guys are going to decide to pack it in like the Maccabees did last week after their most successful album so far.
Yeah, but that was a real shock. Yeah. And we all feel really sad about that. Because they're real contemporaries of ours. They started at a similar time, and they took it to a similar place. You know, they got four albums in, and they've been going for roughly a decade like us. So that was really sad. I think I don't know what to say other than I think.
But Mr. Rejects will still be going on. That's
yeah. I mean, we struggle through. I think their decision is kind of symptomatic of how difficult it is to sustain it in a band in this day and age. I won't go into why, but it's just really sad, you know.
On a brighter note, following on from Curve of the Earth, you're releasing an EP, The Whole Earth, in September. What have we got to look forward to on that EP? Is it much different from the album itself? Is it unreleased works from that album, or is it completely different stuff?
No, exactly that. It's all material that was written and recorded in the same sessions for Curve of the Earth. And it just sort of completes the picture really, which is why it's called the Whole Earth EP, because the album is like a kind of slither, just a sort of curve of the earth, and this is the whole, you put the two together and you get the whole picture of what we've been up to in the last few years. And it does feel different, the material. It's a lot more kind of up-tempo and punchy, and I think whereas the album's quite nostalgic and it sort of looks backwards, this material is kind of quite forward looking really. So
are we going to hear any of it tonight?
No, we haven't learned any of it. We haven't really had time.
I think we're going to save it for the tour that we're going to do in September, and get those new songs out there. So that's what we're looking forward to, you know, is making that tour very curve and whole earth heavy, you know. Yeah. We haven't really had a chance to do that, especially with the festivals. People want to hear like the old stuff. You can't really gauge who's going to come to each festival, what the agenda is of the crowd. So I think this new tour that's going to happen in September, we're going to be focusing on like the new us. So it should be exciting.
It's 10 years since you released your first album, Making Dens, and I was wondering how you guys had changed as a band and how you'd sort of progressed. I mean, you'd already said that you came with this album from a slightly different mentality. I was wondering if there's anything else that had changed in those 10 years.
Well, hopefully it's evidence in the music. We've always tried to make a different record every time we've got together to write and record. We've always been adamant that we don't want to repeat ourselves and that we want to keep the band as fresh and exciting as possible. So as individuals we've changed a lot, and the lineup's changed slightly, but I hope that it's just there in the music really, that kind of that journey and progression. I mean, that's what we try and do, you know. Whether we've achieved that or not is for other people to say really. So
you touched on it earlier, just saying about the tour in September. Can you run us through some of the dates that you're doing, where we can catch you in September?
Will's probably got a sharp memory for that.
Yeah, I've got absolutely no idea.
I believe you're playing in Leamington Spa, which is our local place. But
yeah, we're playing Hull, Adelphi, playing Leeds. I don't remember the name of the place, but it's somewhere on the 23rd of September. I could be massively wrong with that. I probably am massively wrong.
We're playing
with
in Margate.
Oh, we're playing in Margate, yeah.
By the Sea Festival, down in trendy Margate.
Exciting stuff. Yeah. Hackney on Sea. And then there's loads of places. Probably playing Cornwall. Why not?
Why not?
Sure.
Yeah.
Probably not though, but well, yeah. All the information's on the website. Not here.
Thank you very much for joining me and Niall, Mystery Jets. Best of luck with the EP and best of luck with the show tonight.
Thank you very much.
Nice one.